steps right away. You know, you had maybe a week or two before you were taking another new bathroom across there. And you know, they had awful good success rate back those days.
Of course, they didn't have all the court system and stuff we got today, but the success was pretty good compared to what we have today. And I think that's one reason is because they didn't wait. You know, they got right at it. Of course, there were a lot lower bottom maybe drunks than we have today. I don't know. But if you have reached your bottom, that's as low as you want to go. I don't think you want to go any lower than that. And I lost my page. Oh, no, there it is. I don't think you want to go any lower than that. And that's you know, today it's just amazing. The amount of people that are in Alcoholics Anonymous to me that are trying to stay sober on a daily basis. I was just talking to Bruce earlier, and he's going down to Butler, and I says, well, I can probably give you a couple phone numbers of guys down in Butler. All right, I've been around long enough. I know guys in Butler, and I know guys all over this country that have been sober for a while that would be glad to take a new guy to a meeting or take an old-timer to a meeting, whatever it takes, you know. And so I think it's important that we try and get this program just as soon as we can. The sooner we get involved with these steps, because until we start doing these steps, our life isn't going to change. You know, and I think we need to change our life right away, because if we don't change our life right away, nothing's going to happen. I was talking with somebody earlier that, you know, before I came here, they told me from the time I was a teenager, I drank too much. They told me I should quit drinking. The whole Mill Creek police force told me I should drink it. At that time it was two, the day cop and the night cop. Covered all of Mill Creek Township. And, you know, I had a couple judges tell me I drank too much. I've had lawyers tell me I drank too much. I've had cops tell me I drank too much. And so I knew I drank too much. And drinking was a problem for me. So I quit drinking many, many, many times. And it wasn't long before, well, I've quit drinking for this amount of time, so now I'm cured. All right. Now I'll be all right. Now I can have one or two. I can remember going to my cookhouse at my dad's. He only lived a block up here. And after I left home, and he'd have a cookout in his yard, and I would be going through one of my dry periods that I quit drinking because I was in some kind of jackpot. And I would walk in my dad's backyard, and when I walked through the gate, he'd hand me a beer. He said, here, have a beer. I said, Dad, I quit drinking. And my dad says, hell, everybody knows one won't hurt you. And my dad wasn't a drinker. But see, he just didn't want me to be different. And I didn't want to be different. The problem is, when I took that beer, there was no bottom to it. Now, I might be able to get away with one beer that night, and I might take my wife and kids home from that outing, but then I was right back up to the bar within minutes of leaving them off at my house. Or maybe I waited till the next day. Or maybe I waited two or three days. But once I picked up the next one, was Katie barred the door. There was, you know, I didn't go very long. So the thing I had to do was change the way I think. All right? And I didn't understand that. All right? I can remember my first day in detox in St. Vincent's Hospital and 1974, Jim White come and talk to me, and Jim said, I told Jim I was going to quit drinking forever for the rest of my life, because that's what I always did. I always quit drinking forever. And he says, well, if you want to quit drinking, you better either shit or get off the pot. And boy, that made me mad. Of course, Jim ain't that big anymore. He's getting old. I'm not. He is. But He was a pretty big guy. He stuck a big old bony finger in my chest and said, if you want to stay sober, either shit or get off the pot. And see, I never forgot that. Jim don't remember telling me that, but I never forgot that. But see, I never did anything besides put the plug in a jug. I never tried to think about changing the way I thought it had anything to do with it. I didn't understand that at all. And so when I took that fifth and sixth step that we talked about last week, I began to change the way I thought. Because steps 1 through 5 showed me these other character defects I had. All right. So if I have these character defects, and they might be one of the reasons I'm drinking, then I gotta change these character defects. And that's what 8 and 9 is all about to me. All right. 6 and 7, I said I was ready to change them. Well, hell, I said I was ready to do a lot of things in my life and never did nothing about it, you know. I wasn't hard to say, you know, some big guy would have me down on the ground just pounding the hell out of me, and I'd say, okay, I give up, and I'd surrender, and he'd let me up, and as soon as he turned his back, I'd hit him over the head with a bar stool, you know. I didn't surrender. I never surrendered. I didn't know what the word meant till I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, all right? So when I came here and I found out I had these character defects, and now I'm going to turn them over to God, and I'm not too sure I understand who this God is, and they want me to do steps 8 and 9. What the hell are steps 8 and 9? You know what steps 8 and 9 are? Made a list of all persons. Oh, okay. Just checking, Dave. When I made a list of all the persons I had harmed, I wasn't really thinking about the ones I'd harmed so much as the ones that harmed me. You know, I had a lot of resentments in step 6 and 7, and I thought this was going to get rid of, help me get rid of those resentments, and it did, but not the way I thought it was. And I had to start changing my attitude towards the people I lived with. First toward my wife, my dad, my mother, my children, all right, my sister, the people that were immediately associated with me and my family. Because those are the people I harmed the most. You know, my poor dad, I remember first time he had to come and bail me out of jail. A little altercation with a City of Erie motorcycle cop, and I got done beating them up. They hauled me off to jail anyhow. So I'm in the Erie, old Erie City jail down on 7th Street, and I had a phone call, and I called my dad, and I remember my dad coming, and he was all dressed up, had a suit on and a tie, and my dad wasn't a suit and tie guy, but he was that night, and he had his lawyer in tow, and they come in there and, you know, bailed me out of jail is what they did. That was the first time. I can remember the last time my dad came and bailed me out of the city jail. He didn't bother to get a suit and a tie on. He still had his pajamas on. He put a bathrobe on. He still had his slippers on, and he had the checkbook, and he threw the checkbook down on the counter. He says, how much? And that was it. He was thoroughly disgusted, all right? And those are the kind of people I had to make amends to. See, those kind of things, when I was drinking, I just assumed, I guess, that was my right. I don't know. I don't know why I did those things. But my mother and my father, and I was in business with my dad for a lot of years, in and out of business, because he would fire me, and he, you know, and one minute I was not drinking, and he would take me back into business, and I'd be a full partner. I can remember being in the lawyer's office, and they had just given me a full partnership in his business. And I'm signing papers at a podium in the lawyer's office, not a whole lot unlike this. I'm signing these papers, and on the last page, there's a statement there that I read, and I was fully aware of. And it said that if I ever took another drink, The partnership was automatically dissolved. Everything reverted back to my father, and I got nothing. And I was just as sincere that night, that day, about never taking another drink. I just wouldn't do it. I'd quit drinking forever for the rest of my life again.
All right.
And I was never going to drink again, and so that, I had no problem signing that. My dad wasn't a drinking man, and he was in the excavating construction business, and you know, in order to keep good health, you got to take the boys out and then buy them a drink once in a while. My dad didn't drink, and being Scotch-Irish, he's too cheap, and so that would be my job, and the trucks were right here in Garlock, at Clifford. And we would go down the Red Lantern after work, down the airport. And I'd buy the boys a drink. And those guys would have one or two, and then they would maybe get a six-pack and go home, or maybe just go home. But see, once I started buying them a drink, it wasn't long, whether I quit drinking or not, before I would drink it. And I didn't go home. It might be two or three days before I got home. Or at least I was sure as hell. You know, there was a lot of mornings I showed up and so drunk in the morning, you go to work, I couldn't climb in the dump truck. My dad had them big old International corn binders, and there was a hell of a step up there anyhow. But he'd see me trying to get in that truck, and he said, just go home, go to bed. And that's the way my life went. So I got to be willing to make amends to these people. Not only my dad, my mother, and my wife, and my children. Those are what we call, they talk about living amends. I don't know what a living amend is really, other than just living the right way. Doing the right thing by whoever you need to make the amends to, whether it's your family or your business partner, or just somebody down the street. And so that's where I started changing the way I thought in this program, and I started changing the way I started applying those steps to my life. Once we start to apply these steps to our life, all the way up to steps 8 and 9, now we got the promises in a big book. There's the promises in a big book that tell us if we get to step 9, this is what's going to happen to us. And it doesn't say maybe, and it doesn't say you might get these promises. It says you will, if you work these steps. Right? If you apply this way of life to your life, those promises will come true for you. There's no doubt about it. It's in here, and I've seen it happen time and time again. But you have to apply this way of life to your life. I had to. I don't know about you, but I know about me. See, maybe you can get away without doing the steps. Maybe you can stay sober without doing the steps. I did that for a long time. I did steps 1, 2, kind of 3, a little bit of 4, and some of 5. And I knew what all the rest of them were, so I talked about them, but I really didn't understand and apply them to my life like I should. Until I had 4 or 5 years of sobriety. See, after I had sobriety for a while, then I went to a Joe and Charlie seminar. Up to that time, I had never read this big book. I read chapter 5. My sponsor told me, read chapter 5, that's how it works. So now I had the answer, this is how it works. So I don't need to read them other 4, all right? And sure as hell, I don't need to read them stories in the back. Those are all old people. You know, and I wasn't that old when I came here. Now I am, but I wanted to, you know, I'd go to meetings and hear young guys talk my age and tell their stories, and that helped me stay sober. And I stayed sober on the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous for probably 10 years, going to meetings, doing all the things they told me to do, except really study this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Except really understand what those 12 steps are all about. Once I went to Joel and Charlie seminar, and they began to tear them steps down, and we went through it first 165 pages, page by page, we read all the Roman numerals in the beginning, those appendixes or whatever you call them. We read all that. Then I began to understand what those steps were about. And so now I'm at steps 8 and 9, and I got to make amends to these people. How do I make these amends? And so there were some people I had to go to. The monetary amends, I got to tell you, there were some people that I just went bankrupt. Banks, creditors, and it was in sobriety that I went bankrupt. And I tried for years to not go bankrupt, but I went anyhow, because that was the only way to go. The lawyers kept telling me, you got to go bankrupt. Internal Revenue Service, they didn't let me go bankrupt. I had to pay them. I was 30 years sober before I paid off Internal Revenue Service. My father and mother had disowned me when I was in my late 20s, early 30s, sometime in there. And so making amends to them, they said, all you need to do is stay sober. And after a few years, my dad gave me part of the business back, gave me one truck, a honey wagon. I don't know if you know what a honey wagon is. That means we use that to clean out septic tanks, and that was my business when I came here, all right? It might be shit to you, but it was bread and butter to me. But that's what he gave me that. He wanted to give me more of the business because he was really happy that I quit drinking, and he could see the difference that was going to be. I talked it over to my sponsors, and I could not have handled more business than that at that time. I had a hard time handling that. I'm not good with money, drunk or sober, and I'm a lot worse with it yet, My wife pretty much takes care of things today. But my life began to change in these rooms, and my living amends to my parents and to my wife and to my family. There were things I did to my wife that, I just makes me feel terrible when I think about it today. But we had an agreement. She knew about some of the things, because there were some irate husbands that come to the house with a shotgun and things like that. And so she knew that something was going on, and I was advised, you don't tell them names or nothing, just admit yes. And I did that, and I won't do it anymore. And so it's been 42 years and I don't do it anymore. And it took me about 5 years before I quit thinking about doing it anymore. But I didn't do it anymore because I didn't want to get drunk. And after a while, you just know that it's the right. If you begin to get right with your higher power, and you begin to understand what this spiritual part of this fellowship is all about, you just know that those kind of things aren't right anymore. And in the beginning, I was maybe trying to make excuses or something, and I would get some goofy thoughts once in a while. But thank God for sponsorship. Thank God for the old timers in AA. I wouldn't dare. I'd have got killed. But my life began to change. And as my life changed, my wife changed, and my children's life changed. I'm happy to say I was able to be with both my mom and dad when they passed. I sat at the bed and held their hands, and I'd made my amends with them, and that was all taken care of. That some of the things we worry about, well, I worried about when I first sobered up, was some of the monetary things. I worked for Austin Company for a long time. I run the Stone Dock down there in the bay, and petty cash was a thing. When a little local homeowner come in with his pickup truck and got a little gravel or a little sand, we'd give him a little bit, and we collected cash for that, and then it went in petty cash in the office, and I'm running the office, And so, you know, when I left to go home, if I didn't have any money, I'd just take some out of petty cash. Nobody knows how much is in there. Nobody really cares. And that went on for a couple of years. Right? And then I sobered up. Now I got to go around and make amends to these people. And I started making amends, and some of the bills I owed were only, you know, a few bucks here, a few bucks there. But I had no idea what I took from Bob. I had no idea the amount of money I stole. Sometimes I'd take a 10 out of petty cash, sometimes I'd take 100. I never knew. It just depended on how I felt that night, how low I was. And so when I had the meeting with Bob, and we went and I sat down in his office and explained to him what I was doing. I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had to make amends. And I said, told him about the petty cash fund that I'd been running, and he knew about it. See, we think we're getting away with all this stuff, and he knew all about it. And he let me go through the whole thing. And I said, Bob, I have no idea how to pay you back, because I have no idea how much I took. You know, I said, but if you'll come up with an amount, I will pay you that amount, whatever amount you say. I just, some way or another, we'll work it out. He says, why do you think you didn't get a raise in the last 2 years you worked here? I thought he was just being miserable. He knew about it the whole time. You know, and I've had other things like barroom fights. You know, I did a lot of fighting when I was drinking. And there was one guy that I beat him up pretty bad, and so he kept hiring people to go beat me up. And he wasn't having much success at that because I was beating those guys up. And the last guy I beat up, I was sober. It was just like a month or so before I quit drinking. And now I'm in AA, and I'm right away. I hadn't done any of the steps yet other than maybe that first one, but I'm going to make amends because I read that in here, you know. So I had a lot of bars for customers, and Fairview Legion called me up and needed their septic tank pumped on a Sunday morning, so I said I'll be right down, and I went down there and pumped the tank out. And here at the end of the bars, this guy had just beat up a couple weeks before that. Now, been about a month or so, I guess. But I got this make amends thing in my head, so I went up to him and I says, hey, you know, I'm really sorry what I did to you, and I want to make amends. I'm in AA and I quit drinking, and I want to tell you I'm sorry I did what I did. And I said, you got a doctor bill or something, I'll take care of it. He says, Green, every dog has its day, and I'm going to get mine. Just watch your, don't watch your back. Oh my God, that scared the hell out of me. You know, I thought he was supposed to accept me and say, oh, that's nice, you quit drinking, you're a good guy, pat me on the back, you know, maybe give me $5 or something. He didn't. So I called my sponsor and told him. He says, those barroom fights, he was just as much at fault as you were. He says, you don't need to go around making amends for those kind of things. He says, that's not as well. The people like your family, your wife, or if there's somebody you seriously hurt, you know, some of you might know it. When I was 30, I found out a daughter I had when I was 18. And I knew I had her. And I went to the hospital, and she was supposed to be put up for adoption. And I paid the hospital bill, and I gave the mother a check, and when they handed her the baby, she says, I'm not getting rid of it. So she kept the baby. Now, I never seen the baby again for years and years and years. I just kind of put it aside because I'd paid the check, right? And then I got married and I got six kids. Luckily, I had told my wife about this before we got married. So she knew it. And one day I'm pumping a trailer park. My son and I are working, and we were doing this trailer park, and the manager of the trailer park walks up to me and says, I'm gonna marry your daughter. I'm going with your daughter. I got four other daughters, and they're all married. And I don't know what he's talking about. And I'm about to put him in a septic tank if he's monkeying with one of my married daughters. And I said, which daughter is it? He told me her name. And I knew her name. I knew her name, and I'd had her name, you know, for years. I knew her when she was born, they gave me that name. That ain't mine. Anyhow, that really messed me up that day. We were pumping in Lake City, and we were dumping in the sewage plant in Erie, and I'd end up in Northeast or Conneaut, or I just couldn't go the right road. Oh, okay. And I just couldn't, you know, I just flipped out. I knew what he was talking about. And he says, you know, every time we go by your driveway, she says, I got a dad down there and I can't talk to him. She knew from the day she was a little girl, her mother had told her who her father was. And she never said a word to me, never said a word to any. She went to school, my kids, my one daughter was one of her best friends. And so she never said a word to anybody. She's part of the family now, you know. Everything turned out well. But, see, how do I make amends to that mother? See, I had to go, and now I found out. Now I got to go to the mother and explain to her why I never made contact after giving her that check in the hospital that day. And you know, it was a tough situation. And it ended up very well, and everybody loves everybody, and everything's okay. But those are the kind of things you run into when you come to make amends, you know. Sometimes those amends don't catch up to you till you're around for a while. When it says you got to make amends, some of them right now, some of them down the road someplace, some of them you'll never make. You know, there's a chance I would have never made that amend if her boyfriend hadn't have been... had guts enough to come and talk to me. It would have never happened. I never knew about it. And so you don't know. And if somebody dies, what do you do? You know, I've advised a lot of guys. I've never had to make amends yet that I know of to somebody that passed, but I have sponsored guys who have needed to. And the way that we usually work that out is they write a letter and we take it to the grave and burn that letter on the grave, and we assume that they understand that, and that seems to work for them. I've never had to do that personally, but so when it comes to making amends, you need to do it. And whether it's living amends or whether it's amends like I've talked about, however, but you need to make those amends to get on with your life. Once I made those amends, my life began to change. I began to know those promises that they talk about in the big book. I began to know a new freedom and a new happiness. I began to lose my fear and all that stuff. And if you don't understand all them promises, Saturday morning at 9 o'clock, the church in Fairview, down in the basement, we have a promises meeting, and that's been, I've just seen those promises at work in that meeting time after time, and it's time for me to shut up. You got your microphone? Ready to take some questions. I don't know if
great. Thank you, guys.
Anything tonight or not.
We will welcome questions now. I have been asked to remind the group that comments are welcome in the form of a question. So kind of Jeopardy's-ish. I wanted to
say thanks, Buzz, for sharing tonight. And before I forget my question, I wanted to... I'm reading step 9 here, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. What made my mind think about is I've heard a couple people say that make sure you don't just look, you know, like a young guy or young gal, read the book and go, oh, okay, I got to go make that right now. Touch on that a little bit.
You should never make an amends without your sponsors or some senior AA members help, without their advice. They don't need to go with you, but you need to talk it over with them. Good example of that is there was a guy up in New England someplace, had like 20 years of sobriety, and when he was in college, he had raped a lady in college, and never told anybody, never got caught, I guess, or whatever. But anyhow, now he's got all this sobriety, and this gets to bothering him, and so without saying anything to anybody, he writes her a letter. She's married and got a couple kids. The husband got a hold of the letter. That girl had him arrested and put in jail, which she probably should have done. But see, he should never have done all that because he injured her whole family. And we got to think about that. See, with my daughter, when I went to her mother, I didn't talk to her stepfather. All right, I didn't talk to the rest of the family, just to the mother. And I told her, if she wants to tell the family, that's up to her, but I'm not going to. It's not for me to clean my slate at her expense. And sometimes that's what we think, you know, we're going to clean our slate, but really it's going to be at the expense of somebody else, so you got to be very careful about doing that. So always get your sponsor's advice on that.
Thanks, Buzz. Thanks, Bruce.
Get it?
Hi, Buzz. Lou, alcoholic. I wanted to know if the weight that was lifted off your shoulders was as large as the weight that was lifted off of my shoulders tonight when your sponsor said that you didn't have to go back and make amends to people you participated in bar fights with.
Well, there was really no weight lifted off my shoulders. It relaxed me. Because I had no idea most of the bar fights I was in. All right, I was usually in a blackout. And I usually ended up beat up and knocked out. So I wasn't a good fighter. I just thought I was. But then I thought I was a good lover, too. So.
Thanks.
That answer your question?
It sure did.
Pete,
alcoholic. I ran into this gentleman that I owed an amends to, and first time he didn't accept it, it wanted no part, you know, it just walked away. So I accepted it, wasn't happy. 6 weeks later I run into him again, go through the same, you know, amend, and again walked away, wanted no part of it. So I went home, called my sponsor, and he said, listen, you did your best of what you thought you could do is make an amend. And I said, okay. You know, he was fine with that, my sponsor. I was fine with that. Don't you know, 2 months later, I run into this gentleman, 180. I didn't say anything. He came up to me and said, I accept. I had time to think about it. I accept your amend. And that was took all the weight in the world off my shoulders. Yeah. So it's a great thing.
See, there's nothing in that 12 steps that says they have to accept. We're only cleaning our side of the street. And when we talk about making amends, I like to tell people that say that there's a fence between my yard and my neighbor's yard. And my dog goes over and there's a hole in the fence. My dog goes through the hole, goes over in the neighbor's yard, takes his job over there, then comes back home. Mm. Now, the neighbor can get upset about that. My dog's doing his job in his yard. How do I make amends for that? The best way is to go fix a fence. Then the dog can't go over there. See, so to me, that's what making amends is about, patching up whatever's done. In your case, you tried to patch up the fence, and it was up to him whether he wanted to accept that patch or not. You did what you had to do. And that's all you need to do.
Thank you.
Making amends. You mentioned a lot of things, but I can relate with you. I want to know, you probably answered it when you said something about fixing a fence. When I got on the program, I was about a week sober, and I went to make amends, but I went for the wrong reason. I went because I wanted a job. I wanted to make some money again. And the guy told me to get out of his office or he'd call the cops. So I left. And my question to you is, how did you tell your sponsor about your situation?
How would I tell my sponsor about my situation?
Yeah, when you was first sober, you said you were sober about a week and you made amends.
I would tell anybody I sponsor, don't try and make amends that early. That's too early. You really don't understand why you're making the amends. And so you're probably not doing it from a spiritual point of view. You're probably doing it just like you said, you wanted to make some money.
Yeah.
Or you want to get out of a lawsuit or something like that. I've done that too, you know. But the thing is, if you talk it over with your sponsor, see, if your sponsor's got his head on straight, he'll tell you when it's the right time to make that amends.
Right.
You know, and I think that's what every one of us should do. Talk it over with our sponsor before we make those amends. That's what's suggested in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That don't mean we all do it, because I didn't read that part in the big book when I told that guy I was sorry I beat him up.
I didn't either. I didn't read that. I didn't even read the book. I didn't even have one. But I was about a week sober and I went and made amends. Guy told me to get out of his office or he'd have the cops come and get me. And I left and I told my sponsor about it. And he said, what the hell are you doing on that step? On the ninth step? I said, I don't know. He told me to read them. I read them. And you said to work them. I'm working them. He said, no. They're numbered for a reason, Joe. You know, you gotta have, the only reason you went there is to get a job. You didn't go there to make amends. He said, how much you paying the guy back? I said, I ain't paying him nothing. He didn't want to accept my amends. And he said, well, you're gonna pay him $20 a week until he's paid. So I started sending him $20 a week. And I don't know how long it was. I got a letter in the mail, and it was from him. And he said, thank you, Joe, for paying me back. You paid up. And there was a check in there for $200 and some. And I had overpaid him. And he gave me the money back. And he said, I told him, he asked me how long I was sober, and I said a week when I was there the first time. And He said, if you're still sober, sober a year, he said, come and see me, I got a job for you. Well, I already had a job, so I didn't go see him. But, yeah, that make it amends. You want to be careful with it, like you say. That's it, thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Joe. Thank you. I know we got some great thinkers back here. Right.
Thanks, Buzz. Jim, alcoholic. The mother of your first child, when you were just a kid, you went back and you made an amends to her years and years later. Did you give her kind of a heads up that you wanted to get together? If not, if I have a close family member, brother, sister, or one of my guys, and we're ready, and it's time to make that amends and maybe let them know a little bit about Alcoholics Anonymous. Is it right, and how is a good way to kind of arrange that meeting, maybe give them some notice, let them know that you want to get together, what you want to talk about, kind of in general, a good way to approach that, so it's not just kind of a blindside?
First, you talk it over with your sponsor, and he'll advise you, talking with you, and the best way to do it. I would suggest you make a phone call, make an appointment, and go talk to him. That's what I did. But I also got to tell you this, the next harvest of hope. That girl was in Al-Anon. Her mother was in Al-Anon. My wife was in Al-Anon. My other daughter's in Al-Anon. And they're all sitting there at the Al-Anon tent at the Harvest of Hope side by side. And then in walks my first girlfriend from when I was in third grade. And I always accuse her of, it was her fault, because in third grade she dumped me. And so that's why I became a drunk. They're all sitting there together in Al-Anon.
Thanks, Buzz. Thanks, Jim. I'm getting the look from Jerome that he wants to hear one more question. We got time for one more question.
Bruce has got one.
Thanks, Buzz. This question is for Dave. I just wanted, do you know you have two different shoes on?
I do now. Thanks, Bruce. Thank you, Buzz.
Thank you.
Super job.